Okay, well, I am Derek Whitelock, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some work we've been doing to develop a sensor to detect plastic in the gin and sea cotton in the gin. That's important. Just want to mention the folks who have been working with me. That'd be Carlos Armijo and Ed Hughes at my lab, and then Stephen Delwich and Moon Kim at Beltsville in the food quality and food safety labs there. They're kind of imaging experts. They've been working with us, too. We've been hearing a lot about contamination in recent years. U.S. does have the reputation of having some of the cleanest cotton around, but we're still having complaints. And for us in the U.S., that's important. We want to maintain our reputation. So even if we still have fairly clean cotton, we want to work on it and make sure that we keep sending out the cotton that's the best quality there is. Now, some of that may be, I think, a perceived increase. There is an issue that it's not super new, but more and more mills are putting in a device that can actually sense plastic and remove it in their laydown line. And because of that, now a mill, once they have a laydown, they can walk away with a plastic bag probably, full of plastic and contaminants. And then they can look at that and say, well, look, those bales, we know where those bales came from, and they can come back and complain to the folks at CI or National Cotton Council about that plastic. Whether or not it may have been there before, but they didn't have the device, and so they couldn't actually detect it, that's history, so we don't really know. But it's a problem now, and we want to try and take care of it. So from the beginning I started looking at this, I envisioned this as a multi-pronged approach. You know, it's a problem that the whole industry is involved in, from producers all the way to the mills. And actually, I think, you know, in the beginning, if we can do education and prevention, that's probably the best place to do that. If we can keep plastic from getting into the module, from getting into the basket on the picker, we'll solve most of our problems. And that's a big thing that's happening right now. We're doing a lot of work. National Cotton Council and National Cotton Ginners and folks are talking to producers and ginners and trying to get that to happen. But we know that some's going to get through. And so that's where some of the work that we're doing at Gin Labs, and specifically what I'm talking about to you today, is how do we do that? And one way that we're trying to do that is through detection. And if we can detect it, if we can see it, then possibly we can separate it and then deal with it farther down the line, whether that's by hand or with another device. But so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that detection work that we're doing. I started thinking about this quite a while ago. About 2006, and we actually did a little bit of preliminary work. Then we got railroaded on a project that had to do with particulate matter. It was a pretty important project, so we felt like we could do that, we could move over. But we've come back to it now. And this idea has been around for a while. They use NIR, near infrared reflectance, and infrared to basically separate plastics. Not only can they detect the plastic, but they can tell what kinds are there. And so surely we could do that in a gin, and all we want to know is it there? We don't care what kind it is. So we've done some work in the past over the last couple of years. We began at SRC, like I said, quite a while ago, where they did some initial work with near-infrared in the lab using a spectrometer. Then we worked with some people in chemistry at NMSU, and they really focused on the infrared area. And that's one of the reasons is because we know a lot of plastics are clear, and they don't show up well and if you're looking for color, differences in color. And based on that, we did a little bit of exploration with a very simple, low-cost device that was based on LEDs and photodiodes, and we abandoned that pretty quickly because the resolution wasn't there and there was a lot of noise that had to do with how rough the sample was. And it just didn't really work that well. But we did find some things out about that cotton. We found out that there is a difference in spectrum, all the way, you know, from visible all the way up to the infrared spectrum. And there's some places there where you can really tell the difference between the plastics and cotton. One of the issues, though, that occurred is, first of all, most of this work was in the lab. It was done with spectrometers, a lot of it, and also done on lint. And if you think about lint, you know that lint's nice and smooth. It's fairly one color. You don't have a lot of other things in it. And in the gin, if we're going to do this in the gin as early on in the process as we can, we have seed cotton. We have leaves, we have sticks, we have burrs. And so we have this difference here between this nice white background or this background that has a lot of other junk in it. And that other junk actually messes with our measurements quite a bit. The other issue that we have is that our sample is moving really fast, or at least the processing rate's fast. In the mills, they have a system that works for them, but their rates are, I don't know what, 500 kilograms an hour, something like that. And we're talking about 40,000 pounds an hour in a gin, and that's not a real fast gin. That's only 30 bale an hour gin. So we have some issues that we have to deal with. The other thing is, I didn't put a picture up there. I had a picture I was going to put in, which is a big pile of money. And that system that goes in the mills is cost a big pile of money, and most gins don't have that laying around. So we have some hurdles to get over. So I'm going to jump forward to this stuff that we did in Beltsville with spectral imaging. And we worked with Stephen Delwich and Moon Kim, like I told you earlier. And these guys are instrumentation experts and know their business. They know how to detect bacteria on chicken, and they can tell you if a blueberry is bad. So surely they could find some plastic in a piece of cotton. So we went there. We took some contamination samples to them, and we had all kinds of things. We had pieces of margal tarp, old and new. We had different types of bale bagging. We had different pieces of the John Deere module wrap. We looked at twine. That's a significant thing that ends up in cotton bale twine when you're working with alfalfa. Black plastic mulch, which tends to get in there, especially out east where you grow watermelons or something, and then you grow cotton afterwards and suck that right up into the basket. Different types of shopping bags. We know that Walmart bags blow all over the place, and they end up in fields. Bale strapping, a couple different kinds, a couple different flavors. Some clear sandwich baggies. You know, if you're out and you're working in the cotton field and you get hungry, you eat your lunch and then throw that in the module builder. Why not? And then, you know, it's like a trash can. We went ahead and looked at some burlap, and then also spindle grease and some other types of grease, just to see if, well, you know, maybe we could detect those too. So we had quite a bit of things. First work we did again was with a spectrometer, but the interesting thing about this one we used, it had a little spinning cup in it. And we could put a sea cotton background in the back of that spectrometer and then put our sample on top. So we had a background of sea cotton, which we thought would make a difference to help us kind of figure out what we needed to do. We ran all those samples in that spectrometer and ran them twice. And what we ended up with is some spectra like this. That looks a little bit complicated. It's not as complicated as it could be because I actually kept some of the things out. Looks like I got some special little extra things in there. You guys enjoy that. I don't know what that is. But if you look at that, we found some spectra and we did some analysis that we found some bands that had some interesting characteristics. And they're at about 675 nanometers. That's down in the visible light range. At about 1210 nanometers. At about 1750. And then way up in around 2300. And these are all places where there's a big difference. There's a significant difference between the sea cotton and also the plastics. And we thought, well, if we focus on those areas, if we can get away from hyperspectral and focus on just some bands, then hopefully we can keep the cost of this system down. So there's a lot of stuff on this chart, but what I wanted to show is we ran some logistic regressions, and we wanted to see is if we used those bands, could we just pick out the cotton that was in there? And you'll notice on this first one, everything in blue is not cotton. It's all the things, the contaminants. Everything in green is a cotton, part of a cotton plant, either lint or seed cotton or trash. And everything that's red is classified wrong. So at 2300 nanometers, we were able to classify most everything correctly. There was a few things like the cotton trash and one of the clear bags, the clear baggie, that just couldn't tell the difference. If you look at 1730, we have similar results, the trash and the clear baggie again. We couldn't really pick them out. At 1210, actually a little bit better. One of the pieces of trash actually was classified in green there. You see it down here as a piece of plant material. And at 674, which we thought was an interesting band there down in the visible range, nothing worked. All of the cotton and plants and those things ended up being classified as not cotton. That's not a bad thing, though, because if we start combining some of those bands, we're looking at more than one, then we start getting better results. And so this is a graph. What you see there is that all the green things, all the plant material, were classified as plant material, and all the blue things were classified as not cotton, which they are. So we were pretty encouraged by that. But again, this is done in the lab. This is done with a spectrometer, but we did have a seed cotton background. So then we thought, well, we need to do some spectral imaging because that's really kind of where we're going to go. We got to take an image of cotton flowing or doing something, but we're not going to take samples and put it in a spectrometer. So we did some spectral imaging, and we have two different systems. One that does UV fluorescence and visible and near-infrared imaging, and it has different light sources depending on which type of image you're going to take. And then there was one they have that does shortwave infrared, and it goes up to 1,700 nanometers. It's not quite as far as the spectrometer that we used, and we're going to see that actually that causes that we fell short there because we had some bands up higher at 1,730, 1,750, and also at 2,300 we would have liked to see. Those guys do have a new system that they're calibrating right now, and if we need to go back, we can go back there and use that, but it's just now being put together. So what we did is we took our sample, we put it on a plate like this, and you can see we have a couple different samples on there, and then we scanned it in their device with a camera and lights, and we end up with images like this. And actually for each sample, we ended up with a stack of images, one for each wavelength that the device takes. These are just some examples that you see. You can see that like the twine really sticks out in some of the different wavelengths. And then we took each one of those samples and the stack of images actually, and using some hyperspectral software that those guys developed, we were able to pull out the spectra for each different sample. We did that by collecting about 100 pixel space four different times on each one of those pieces. Then we came up with some spectra right now. I don't have the full statistical analysis for you, but I do have some spectra. And we can see we still have some of those areas that of interest that seem to look like they're going to be interesting. And this is in the visible range where we see around 675 or so, we see some large differences between some things like the bale strapping and here the new module tarp that's blue. Of course, that's kind of in the red area. I put those in there. You see the blue and the green and the red areas of the graph. And so we have some areas here that we think we can look at. And, of course, that makes sense. Cotton's not blue, so we ought to be able to detect it. We ought to be able to see it if we use visible light. In the shortwave infrared, we see again that dip at 1200. There's a pretty significant dip there, and that has to do with the components of the plastics. We again think this might be an area if we need to go into the higher wavelengths we could use. We weren't able to take the images again of the higher wavelengths. One last thing I want to show you, one other spectra, and this is something that really stuck out with us, and that's with the spindle grease and the other grease. And with the UV fluorescence, the spindle grease really, really fluoresced under visible light in the visible range. And so we think it'd be quite easy using UV light to do that. And that's already been being used in a lot of places where they're trying to detect oil on cotton using black light. And so we think that's probably pretty much a no-brainer. So what are we going to do with this? Well, we need to finish up the main statistical part, and I have a lot of that done, but it wasn't able to get it in this. Yeah, I broke the projector. Mine looks good. Gee, that one looks bad. We're going to do a combined spectra. We're going to try to put those two from the two different imagers together, and work on a principal component and do some more logistic regression to see can we tease out some of that information. Looking at those images, not at the stuff in the spectrometer. We also think we might need to look at some wavelength ratios, and that's because we have differences in lighting, some problems with that. If we use a ratio similar to what you might use out in the field for like an NDVI, we could then hopefully deal with some of the problems with lighting or changes in the process. If we need to go into longer wavelengths, Beltsville now has that capacity. We might be able to go out there and at least get some scans for that. And right now, I think the first year here, coming up this year, we're gonna go ahead and move forward, try to produce a prototype, and I think focus on the visible area. That's cheaper, it's easier, like Matthew said to me today, he said, go for the low hanging fruit and see what we can do, and then if we need to reach out farther in those longer wavelengths. So that's kind of where we're going, and that's all I have. I don't know if there's any questions. I had a few more, fewer seconds than you did.
Three or four more.
Yeah.
Questions?